Pope Benedict XIV encyclical Vix Pervenert on Usury and Other Dishonest Profit November 1, 1745 to the Venerable Brothers, Patriarchs, Archbishops, Bishops, and Ordinary Clergy of Italy. Venerable Brothers, Greetings and Apostolic Benediction. 1. Hardly had the new controversy, namely, whether certain contracts should be held valid, come to our attention, when several opinions began spreading in Italy that hardly seemed to agree with sound doctrine, we decided that we must remedy this. If we did not do so immediately, such an evil might acquire new force by delay and silence. If we neglected our duty, it might even spread further, shaking those cities of Italy so far not affected. Therefore we decided to consult with a number of the cardinals of the Holy Roman Church, who are renowned for their knowledge and competence in theology and canon law. We also called upon many from the regular clergy, who were outstanding in both the faculty of theology and that of canon law. We chose some monks, some mendicants, and finally some from the regular clergy. As presiding officer, we appointed one with degrees in both canon and civil law, who had lengthy court experience. We chose the past July 4th for the meeting at which we explained the nature of the whole business. We learned that all had known and considered it already. 2. We then ordered them to consider carefully all aspects of the matter, meanwhile searching for a solution. After this consideration, they were to write out their conclusions. We did not ask them to pass judgment on the contract which gave rise to the controversy, since the many documents they would need were not available. Rather, we asked that they establish a fixed teaching on usury, since the opinions recently spread abroad seemed to contradict the Church's doctrine. All complied with these orders. They gave their opinions publicly in two convocations, the first of which was held in our presence last July 18th, the other last August 1st. Then they submitted their opinions in writing to the secretary of the convocation. 3. Indeed, they proved to be of one mind in their opinions. The nature of the sin called usury has its proper place and origin in loan contract. This financial contract between consenting parties demands, by its very nature, that one return to another only as much as he has received. The sin rests on the fact that sometimes the creditor desires more than he has given. Therefore he contends some gain is owed him beyond that which he loaned, but any gain which exceeds the amount he gave is illicit and usurious. 2. One cannot condone the sin of usury by arguing that the gain is not great or excessive, but rather moderate or small. Neither can it be condoned by arguing that the borrower is rich, nor even by arguing that the money borrowed is not left idle, but is spent usefully, either to increase one's fortune, to purchase new estates, or to engage in business transactions. The law governing loans consists necessarily in the equality of what is given and returned. Once the equality has been established, whoever demands more than that violates the terms of the loan. Therefore, if one receives interest, he must make restitution according to the commutative bond of justice. Its function in human contracts is to assure equality for each one. This law is to be observed in a holy manner. If not observed exactly, reparation must be made. 3. By these remarks, however, we do not deny that at times together with the loan contract certain other titles which are not at all intrinsic to the contract may run parallel with it. From these other titles, entirely just and legitimate reasons arise to demand something over and above the amount due on the contract. Nor is it denied that it is very often possible for someone, by means of contracts differing entirely from loans, to spend and invest money legitimately, either to provide oneself with an annual income, or to engage in legitimate trade and business. From these types of contracts, honest gain may be made. 4. There are many different contracts of this kind. In these contracts, if equality is not maintained, whatever is received over and above what is fair is a real injustice, even though it may not fall under the precise rubric of usury, since all reciprocity, both open and hidden, is absent. Restitution is obligated. Thus, if everything is done correctly and weighed in the scales of justice, these same legitimate contracts suffice to provide a standard and a principle for engaging in commerce and fruitful business for the common good. Christian minds should not think that gainful commerce can flourish by usuries or other similar injustices. On the contrary, we learn from divine revelation that justice raises up nations, sin, however, makes nations miserable. 5. But you must diligently consider this, that some will falsely and rashly persuade themselves, and such people can be found anywhere, that together with loan contracts there are other legitimate titles, or, excepting loan contracts, they might convince themselves that other just contracts exist, for which it is permissible to receive a moderate amount of interest. Should anyone think like this, he will oppose not only the judgment of the Catholic Church on usury, but also common human sense and natural reason. Everyone knows that man is obliged in many instances to help his fellows with a simple, plain loan. Christ himself teaches this: do not refuse to lend to him who asks you. In many circumstances, no other true and just contract may be possible except for a loan. Whoever therefore wishes to follow his conscience must first diligently inquire if, along with the loan, another category exists by means of which the gain he seeks may be lawfully obtained. 4. This is how the cardinals and theologians, and the men most conversant with the canons, whose advice we had asked for in this most serious business, explained their opinions. Also we devoted our private study to this matter, before the congregations were convened, while they were in session, and again after they had been held, for we read the opinions of